They or could it have been me, whose expectation had added the detail as I looked? I started talking to a couple who promenade, and asked them who was pointed at a large mansion surrounded by a park in the distance. As we approached the front door of the mansion, two servants opened the doors and the owner, a true old-fashioned English gentleman, welcomed us inside. "We've been expecting you," he said, to my surprise. After my probing, he explained to me that they had all been living here on this planet for some 70 or 80 years. It was part of an experiment. When they died, a group of them got together and were transported onto this strange new world to establish a colony, or a community, from scratch. Given the dimension they were in, this was not as hard a challenge as the first Western settlers in America or Australia faced. With their combined effort, they soon created a very acceptable home with all the luxuries the privileged gentry of their time could afford. They even had servants. I wondered what kind of people would volunteer as servants in a world which would allow them, by the mere power of their intent, to live the life of the ruling class. The owner of the mansion explained to me that the servants, and all the animals as well, were artificial entities, established gradually as self-contained entities by the consistent will of their owners and which would, to a certain degree, even develop personalities. They were astonishingly convincing. They had certainly fooled me into thinking that they were real. My host showed me around the grounds. Outside was a huge park with stables, tennis courts and a golf course. The architecture was amazing. Something on this scale would easily have fetched a few million pounds back on Earth. He explained they had an agreeable life and that the community of some 40 or 50 original settlers lived here happily. They spent most of their time developing their hometowns and grounds and expanding their luxurious lifestyle. The creation of artificial entities like servants and staff was an integral part of it. 143. He explained that everybody felt that after so many years the experiment had now come to its natural end and that people had begun to tire of their lives here. He told me that he was glad that we had come to collect them. He said that he and his wife would be keen to gather a few mementos to take with them. My friend, who had been with me until just now, was chatting to another gentleman and when I joined them we were shown a secret door he had kept, or had been trying to keep, secret from the others during all these years, but he wasn't 100% sure that he had succeeded. The door led to a downstairs to a different world altogether. It was like Aladdin's cave. As we were going down the stairs, a large underground palace opened up before us, which was straight out of 1001 Nights. Everything was in the classical Middle Eastern style, displaying the opulent wealth of some sultan, which can be seen only in fairy tales. To my astonishment, we saw a number of scantily dressed women bowing in front of us and flocking around their master. He told us without any flicker of embarrassment whatsoever that this was his secret lust palace. He had kept it secret because it was the only way he could indulge in his wildest fantasies, which would not necessarily find approval with the other settlers. Also, he said, it was important to him to have a private life. He had worked for many years to create this luxurious underground kingdom. I was astonished by the number of beautiful, sexy maidens and began to wonder what it was that had attracted them to become his slaves. He read my thoughts and, with a smile, he explained that all his mistresses were artificial entities and not real humans. They were of his own creation, imagined to perfection, refined and beautified by loving thought. They were ensouled by his love and affection and their attractiveness were proof of this. These were his dreams manifested. I was shocked and fascinated in equal measure. They were almost too real to be just a fantasy. I was aware of one young, rather stereotypical girl with jet black hair, fiery emerald eyes and pouting deep red lips who appeared to be rather sullen. Reading my thoughts, the man confessed that she was jealous of the other girls and that he, other residents gathering there 144. This was one of the more profound and intense experiences I had had for a very long time. It was all the more profound as it threw up a great number of questions, and for days I delved into deep meditation, pondering the nature of the world I had encountered. Thinking about the man with his private harem, it became clear to me that the next world is a place where all kinds of fantasies must be fulfilled. No found it difficult to control her. He didn't know how to deal with her jealousy. All he could do was give her lots of attention. I asked what would happen to them when he left. He said that under normal circumstances, artificial entities, like everything else that was no longer being sustained by the attention of the settlers, would fade away gradually. But he wasn't so sure that this would apply in his case. It would be more likely that they would accompany him wherever he went, because he couldn't think of any way of shaking himself loose from them. In the countless years he had spent with them, they had grown so strong that they were almost persons in their own right. Looking at two beauties with long blonde hair standing next to him and gently caressing his chest, I wondered why anyone would want to dispense with such attractive companions, but then apart from Goethe's poem The Sorcerer's Apprentice sprang to my mind, which said, roughly translated, "Now the spirits, which I had called upon, I could I not banish any more. I guess they will be with me for a while," he said, which was confirmed eagerly by the young lady's broad, almost triumphant smiles. Back in the mansion, the owners had assembled a hoard of their things, which they said had sentimental value. I noticed there appeared to be beautifully crafted artifacts among the other things, and of these the one that caught my eye was a plaque fashioned in an unknown metal, which I was told proudly was the title to the lordship of the settlement. Outside the building I saw belongings. Unfortunately, here the story ends. I woke up when Julie offered me a cup of tea, but it wasn't a dream I had woken from. 145 Matter, how bizarre. That is the very nature of these dimensions. We can easily imagine that this will apply to even the most corrupt and criminal fantasies, which undoubtedly will take place on the lower dimensions. One may shudder about the scope of this. Fortunately, I was spared witnessing these nightmare regions, and any person of reasonable integrity will never come across them. Here in everyday life, whatever our fantasies, we readily accept that our nightly dreams fulfill a similar function. However, in the next dimension, fantasies become physical realities, no matter how wild. In a sense, they are still fantasies, and in the case of the young man with his harem, no real people needed to be involved or exploited at all. No matter how we judge the actions of our fellow humans, we must face the reality that as a species we are programmed to gather experience no matter how extreme. When reflecting on the event in deep meditation, it was made clear to me that the settlers of this story had died in the 1920s. At a party or gathering, the group had mixed with some enthusiastic astronomers who had built a spaceship to venture into the higher dimensional counterparts of deep space. They could simply have dispensed with the spaceship and used their bodies to glide bird-like through outer space, visiting other worlds and planets, but the idea of the spaceship had come about because they wanted a more social environment. So they assembled this ship and went on an adventurous excursion through space. I had the immediate impression that the space they had visited was on an even grander and more magnificent scale than in the physical universe, which in itself is impossible to imagine. And if we are staggered by looking at images taken with giant space telescopes, then it is even more staggering to imagine a universe not only much vaster, but richer in its creation. In my inner vision, I saw the party evolve into a lively discussion and the decision that the group should start a settlement on another planet feet away from the place they were accustomed to. After they had discovered the planet with the council of their astronomer friends, they established a colony. Their astronomer friends simply projected back to where they had come from, leaving the ship behind to remind them of their history. Any one of the settlers could have left at any time, but it had become part of their folk history that they had traveled great distances and that they were dependent on astronautical help to be escorted back to their original home. What really happened, I believe, was the realization that it was time to move on. 146. One thing that struck me as curious was the very mundane, Earth-like physicality of their creations. For instance, the car and its incredible level of detail, like the minor dents in the chrome and the micro scratches on the paintwork, which can only be appreciated close up. I then thought about the phenomena which physicists on Earth describe as the observer effect, whereby subatomic particles change their behavior in accordance with merely being observed. It seems that physicists really are scratching at the door to the next dimension. I have found that matter, once in the next dimension, is easily manipulated by thought. In fact, the main apostrophe, dead relatives, appears to be the pursuit of creation, and the .22s can be accomplished makes it a very attractive hobby pastime of our less than ease with which this indeed. It is so easy in fact, that our subconsciousness takes an active underscore and vigorous part in it. This would explain the appearance of the micro scratches in the paintwork when I looked at the bonnet of the Bentley close-up, as well as the minuscule blemishes in the chrome. It is what I would have expected, and what might have been assembled instantly from the universal matrix when I focused my attention on the car. This also throws new light on our dreams, which can be the most realistic creations when we live them out. Life in the next dimension is indeed a magical experience. There are worlds that have been inherited by disciplined minds, adhering to convention and interested only in replicating the world that they had grown to love when on Earth, but there are other worlds, more adventurous, more bold in design and creative in fantasy, which are there to be explored by travelers also more adventurous, bold and creative. Maybe there is an element of insanity in the next world on from TE physical, which makes people wish to hold on to solid and proven virtues and values. Being an artist, I can see myself anticipating with eagerness the greatest adventure man is likely to encounter after his death. The novel experience of meeting artificial entities was a great eye-opener to me. When investigating the phenomena further during meditation, I found that the creation of artificial entities is more widespread than I had anticipated. After all, there may be many men here on Earth who would love the opportunity to emulate the life of the settler with his own persona harem. There are stories since antiquity, like Tyre ancient sculptor Pygmalion who loved the statue he created so much that she came to life. The next world appears to be a place where our dreams come true. Whether they turn 147 out good or bad is just another experience to help us forward in our evolution as sentient beings. Physical work in a non-physical world. 22nd of October 1977, 6:10 a.m. After meditating for 45 minutes, I entered a deep trance with emerging images beckoning me to succumb to a dream. A heavy buzzing sound put me on conscious alert and with great clarity I took control of the situation. I found myself immediately fully awake in their next dimension, a counterpart of Watford, where we lived at that time. Curiously, the surroundings kept changing as if they couldn't make up their minds about whether they were a dream or a reality. Julia popped into the scene and disappeared again like some otherworldly phantom. I concluded that she was a figment of my imagination, an artificial entity that I had created out of unsolved conflicts and a desire to be close. As I observed her phantom, her features began to morph and with a jolt I realized I was looking at myself as if in a mirror. The shock catapulted me back into my body. I decided to discontinue with my meditation and to go back to bed to get more sleep. Almost as soon as I drifted off, I found myself sitting in full waking consciousness on the steps of a tall building. Young people poured out, seemingly oblivious of my presence. I concluded it was outside the main door of a college. I had to concentrate to keep my awareness and I stared at the paws of the stones in front of me until I had clarity. The scenery didn't change at first, but when my attention became even more focused, I saw soft mists of color drifting before me. T1 were as sweet as perfume. Through the mists a wide open cowantrisic emerged, covered with nuances of emerald greens. I stared mesmerized at black rocks near to where I sat, arranged in a mysterious geometric pattern. Whether they were man-made or the creation of some celestial creatures I could not tell. They stretched out further and further in increasing variations until stopping at the shores of a calm and peaceful lake. This was a place so serene that it invited contemplation. Smooth, gentle waves rippled ashore, breaking with musical sounds rather than the white noise of physical waves. 148. I don't remember getting up, yet suddenly I found myself standing at the water's edge. Looking around, I discovered the whole lake was framed by rising and falling hills, like a grassy equivalent of the lake's swells. It was only natural to rise eagle-like into the air. This was my natural element. Carried on the wind of sweet feelings, I drifted without thought over sheer endless terrain. On the verge of being lullabied into a blissful dream, I remembered where I was and that it was time to stop indulging and start doing some proper work. I descended to the ground, gently trying not to break the fragile blades of grass under my feet. I needed to know, for no other reason than to satisfy my desire for facts, what the nature of this world truly was. Was it made from dreams, human imagination, or was it formed in a similar fashion to land on planet Earth, by the almighty powers of J-physics? Where was I? A good starting point was to take to the air again. To my great surprise, I came to rest only moments later on a rubbish dump. At least, that's what I thought it was. I wondered whether my contrived and worldly thirst for facts had corrupted my state of mind and lowered me to a much more basic dimension than the heavenly scene I had so much enjoyed moments earlier. But the rubbish dump turned out to be made from precious metals. Silver and gold flashed all around me. Not far from the heaps I saw buildings like factories. At least a dozen people were working on the site, carrying metals and loading and unloading strange wagons. I approached a worker. He appeared to have Down's syndrome. Having worked as a therapist with the mentally disabled at that time, I considered the possibility that these people may be dreamers, making up for their lack of physical activity on the earth plane by compensating here in their dreams with this physical labor. I asked the man whether I could have a chat with somebody in charge. He pointed towards a man floating across the site in an armchair. The moment I spotted him, he came towards me. I couldn't suppress a smirk. He operated his armchair like a one-man helicopter. I think I offended him with the thought, because he changed course and, 149, disappeared with his chair into a small hut perched on tall stilts, overlooking the site. I tried to strike up a conversation with another worker, but he was too busy, and I thought he was almost angry with me for disrupting his work. Obviously, there was no room for me here, and I decided to return to where I had come from. The experience had left me feeling rejected and depleted. Taking to the air again, I had difficulty controlling my flying movement and I lost altitude almost as quickly as I had risen up, which I tried to regain vainly with ineffective swimming movements. Movement and flight in this dimension is definitely affected by feeling, I thought. The expression "as high as a kite" now made sense to me. But maybe it was my lack of focus and an incoherent mind that caused my difficulties. I thought about the man in his flying armchair, and assuming a sitting position in midair, I pretended to operate an invisible helicopter. I succeeded magnificently. When I pushed an imaginary lever control backwards, I moved forward, when I pushed down it went up, and vice versa. Finally, several hundred feet above the ground, I spotted a road snaking across the land below me. A wide thoroughfare or a broad highway lined with trees, which led towards a town in the distance. People coming towards me passed under me without paying me any attention. I changed direction, crisscrossing the country like some aimless flying tourist. After a short time, I began to tire of my maneuvers. I thought it was a pointless waste of time. Having started the day with meditation, I felt that this was not the most worthwhile thing to do. I settled down on the grass. Closing my eyes, I took a long breath from the depth of my stomach and raised it up through my body, and chanted my mantra. The effect was instantaneous and dramatic. My body was catapulted into the air on the current I had created, up to a dizzying height. Each breath and every chant increased the sensation, and I was flooded with bliss and overwhelmed by warmth. When breathing out and relaxing, I surrendered like a feather to a current which can only be described as love. I could have been a fish being carried blissfully by the stream, or a bird carried by the wind. 150. Another deep breath and a sightseeing tour of a big city. 3rd of January 2007. When I became lucid in my dream, I was standing in a room with several people, all of whom I seemed to know, but not from my worldly encounters. There were two women and two men. We were all about the same age, and a lot younger than I was at the time on the physical plane. I would say we were in our late 20s or early 30s. One of the men was a rather authoritative figure, but very friendly. He suggested we go outside and have a sightseeing tour of the town. Words are strange things. They can conjure images based on the experience of the speaker. One day, when we as a species venture the higher dimension, only a smile and a wink will be and communicate our experiences. Until then, words are all we have. My body appeared fast asleep when my attention resumed as half meditating. I gathered the recent events and willed them to EJ memories in my physical brain. This was the only way to bridge between the two dimensions, otherwise my mind would have clean of the experience. Was after this there was a long break in my out-of-body excursions. Almost as if I had spent all the heavenly experiences a lot to or time for a break. I still spent many hours in meditation, starting at in the morning, and late at night before retiring to bed. Dates I had lucid dreams, but not worth recording. I only enter into my diaries, but no other details. Chant unfolded the universe in front of me. A vast space opened up, a giant symmetrical web made from golden threads, each junction studded with an enormous golden sun. Each sun casting off golden patterns, which interacted with each other. The length of time between breaths seemed unnatural as I drift through indescribable feelings. Another breath. The space deepened further still until it revealed an infinite glorious blue space. The OY words which came to mind were passion, devotion and love, and yet they sounded almost insultingly inadequate to describe what I saw here. Unique. Which 151. Our little group stepped outside the building and onto a large square. I couldn't believe my eyes. The town was magnificent. All the buildings were of a Baroque architecture, but to call it simply Baroque would do the magnificence of the buildings a great discredit. However, the first thing I noticed about the buildings was the sheer scale of them. They were edifices, each one a monument to the architect who conceived it. The details were phenomenal and very elaborate, so much so that I could quite easily have stood in front of any of these structures for many hours to absorb their intricacy and artistic accomplishment, their inherent harmony and expression of character. It is impossible to begin to describe them. The material used for their construction added an additional dimension to their appeal. The builders had used translucent stones, mixed tastefully with more traditional stones for contrast. While the style of the town was broadly Baroque, each one was made it impossible to decide where to begin to look. The town, although large by Earth standards, was not very busy at all. Only a few visitors, no more than curious tourists with no other purpose than to satisfy their visual desires, were to be seen. It was like a huge non-functional city. Its main purpose seemed to be to look pretty. As so often in these dimensions, I was able to identify the approximate location of this town simply by its atmosphere. Although I could not identify any architectural features, I knew instinctively that this was a superdimensional counterpart of the city of Hamburg. One feature of the earthly Hamburg was apparent, however, the multitude of canals crisscrossing the city. Those by themselves had a great charm, they were Venice-like, but infinitely better since more thought had gone into the design of the embankments, where people walked along happily and watched quaint boats going past. When there is all the time in the world and an unlimited source of energy and power, then it is easy to understand why it is so easy to create cities of such artistic perfection that are possible to realize only in the imagination on the physical level. There, the physical reality is staggering. Around each streetcomer we found a new, totally unexpected part of the town. On one occasion it was a fairly narrow lane leading, 152 into an open square. The houses were much smaller and of a Tudor-style design, except that they had taken Tudor to another level. The dark wooden beams were carved very intricately, which would have taken many years to accomplish on Earth. The whole atmosphere of this part of the town was designed solely to give visual pleasure. And as if that wasn't enough, our guide then took us out of the square to a low-walled terrace overlooking a grand river. To my surprise, I noticed that the scenery was covered in snow. A golden light from the sky made the whole place glisten in rainbow colors. The snow looked so randomly dispersed that I thought it would have been impossible to generate the effect artificially. I bent down to take a closer look and found that the snow was made up of trillions of beautiful, intricate ice crystals, which again, I thought would have been impossible to generate via human imagination. I looked at our guide, who just smiled without divulging an explanation. The golden light reflecting off the snow's surface had a stimulating effect on me, generating a deep pleasure. Neither the snow nor the atmosphere was cold at all, but rather gentle and comforting. I remembered a feeling I had had as a child when I came in from playing in the snow and warmed my frozen hands on the stove, and the incredible pleasure this had generated, the feeling of being home, warm and secure. This is how I felt. I was at home, warm and secure and surrounded by snow. Our little group wandered along the riverbank and then the two young women of our company split off and skipped along ahead of us like children disappearing into a park. We came to a point where the big sea-like river branched off into a smaller stream cascading down a small waterfall about 20 feet high. Without warning, one of my companions jumped straight into the water fully clothed with a cheerful shout. This was the first time I had looked at myself, and seeing myself dressed in a beige suit with an open summer shirt, I wondered whether I should take my clothes off and follow suit. Somehow this seemed to be too much trouble, as I just jumped down the waterfall to meet my beckoning friend and floated blissfully in the warm, happy current without the discomfort of feeling wet. The floating feeling was, 153 marriages made in heaven 18th of November 2007 Partying seems to be a great way to spend time in the next dimension. On a number of occasions I have stumbled into festivities and parties which would put the Rio Carnival to shame. And when you think that there are no constraints on budget, time or venue, and no authorization or license is needed, then it is easy to understand that the party of all parties is possible in a world limited only by the power of imagination. I could not help but be impressed by the inventiveness of the participants of these parties and the unlimited capacity for their enjoyment. After all, there was a lot to be joyful about. It isn't hard to see the effect that the combined joy and exuberance of hundreds, maybe even thousands, of partygoers has on the emotional experience. Even as an outsider I found it a breeze to blend in, and I was able to study the dynamics of these extraordinary events without being overwhelmed by them, always conscious that I was a visitor in another dimension. Enhanced by the childlike joy we felt, and before I knew it one of the women had jumped into the stream to join us. What followed was almost too corny to describe. One moment we were paddling and splashing about, the next my friend was commandeering a big raft, which he navigated skillfully and powerfully across the river while pulling stunts in the process, which caused much laughter. Without having to dry ourselves after getting out of the water we continued our walk alongside a park until we came to an open green. We entered a huge brick and glass tower, a very contemporary piece of architecture, beautifully designed. Without quite knowing how, we found ourselves in a corridor of the upper floor. At the end of the corridor was a floor-to-ceiling vestibule overlooking a vast expanse of landscape. When I entered the vestibule I was actually standing on a glass floor with a huge drop hundreds of meters below me. I was shocked for a moment, and feared that I might fall through the fragile looking glass. But it held very firm underfoot. Quite abruptly, I found myself awake in my bed, regretting the fact that I had had no opportunity to say goodbye to my friends.